welcome to a Thursday edition of Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Happy Thursday, people. I like to say happy, happy, started happy. And I'm happy today because I'm excited about the conversation. We're going to be talking about nepotism today.
Why are we talking about nepotism?
Well, the conversation got brewing on a national scale the second day of the NBA draft, when Bronny James, the son of NBA superstar LeBron James, got drafted by the Lakers at number 55. He'll now play alongside his dad. They'll be the first father-son team to play on the same team at the same time. It's great.
Yeah.
But folks started saying, if Bronny James' last name wasn't James, would he have gotten that job? And so we started thinking about it. I know you and I have had this conversation. Wow.
Yeah, lots of sort of round the table chatter about this.
And so our question for today is this. Is nepotism, that is giving a leg up to your, in your profession, to your son, daughter, niece, nephew, cousin, whomever, is nepotism good or bad? We want to hear from you. Is nepotism good or bad? And we have a whole panel of experts to help us walk through it and talk through it and think through it, the different ways that it impacts people. And it's not just celebrities and athletes.
Right. And I'll massage the question a little bit. Yeah. Is there a case to be made for nepotism? So maybe there's a middle ground here, right? Because I think you could say nepotism has benefits or works better in some cases or industries than others. And like Cherry said, the number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. I'll also add, Cherry, that I think the conversation about LeBron James and his son and all of the Nepo baby celebrities is like a funhouse mirror version of a much more interesting conversation to me, which is
it's
how nepotism
everywhere.
Yeah, sort of works in regular, degular, as you would say, industries all the time.
Yeah.
And we do have someone who's going to address that, which I'm really keen to hear, because most nepotism does not happen in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It happens on your street, in your job, right? So again, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. Before we get there, a trio of local stories to discuss at this hour. John Daugherty, Johnny Doc, the once very powerful labor leader and head of IBEW 98, is awaiting his sentencing in a federal courtroom. We don't know the sentence yet. This hearing's been going on for a couple of hours. But just to get you back up to speed, Johnny Doc was convicted in two separate trials. The first was on bribery charges that involved a former councilman, Bobby Heenan, who's already in prison. The second trial had to do with embezzlement, pilfering funds from the very union that he led for almost 30 years. Prosecutors are seeking 11 to 14 years in prison for the once powerful Johnny Doc. No word yet on whether the judge will agree.
Yeah, what I'll be looking for today is what Johnny Doc says to the judge, because he gets an opportunity today, and he may take it or he may not, to address the judge. He could ask for leniency. His lawyers have told reporters that, look, you know, his legacy has been tarnished, and that is punishment enough. So we'll see where the sentencing falls, and we'll, you know, all be watching.
This is an interesting story to me, Cherry, too, because for us in the media, we've been watching this saga really, really closely. I wonder how much normal people, I say normal, I mean people not in media, like really care about this. Or is it just, oh, another, you know, oh, another corrupt Philly politics-involved guys going to prison. This happens every few years, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it's a typical case like that because of his power, because of his position, because of his connection to so many different elected leaders over the years. But I do think this one, I just wonder if there's a disconnect here, or it exposes a disconnect into the types of stories that media care about a lot and the types of stories that people who are not in media care about or not in media slash politics.
Yeah. And we're sort of inside the bubble. So because we're very, we read a lot. We watch the money. Right. You want to see if the union gave money. Would this give this person an advantage that makes them more likely to get elected? And so we watch those things.
Yeah.
But does the average voter care or watch it?
That's my question.
That's the question.
I know a lot of people.
Whether
you're
this?
In the bubble or out, they care about the price bubble down the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
So after that pandemic run on Jersey Shore houses and high prices that people have been experiencing the past several years, there are signs, slight signs that the market on the Jersey Shore is softening. So realtors, Avi, they're seeing prices dropping for rentals. Homes are seeing vacant weeks during prime time during the summer. And longtime shore goers are saying, look, I'm going some other place for less money. And the places that they're talking about, Italy, Aruba, where they don't have to bring their sheets or pots and pans. Okay. And they're like, I'm going to enjoy myself for less money. So all those people who rushed down the shore during the pandemic, bought high with high interest rates.
But can you get a funnel cake in Aruba? That's thinking, what I want to know.
Yeah, no, I probably, maybe, who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I've never been to Aruba, I'm not sure.
But thinking they could make money with little effort, they realize that it might not be as easy. So now the response is panic, Avi. Folks are off throwing in all kinds of incentives.
Yeah.
You want a golf cart with that?
Oh, a golf cart.
You want a paddle boat with that?
Oh, wow. I didn't know I could get a golf cart.
You know, all those things. And the prices are dropping. If you wait until about 30 days to your vacation date, steep price discounts.
I'll take a golf cart. It is fun driving. I don't golf, but I do love golf carts.
You know, and you know, I see you got your little Eagles hat on. I can see you riding around in a golf
cart. Oh, yeah. With you know? A cold beverage. Non-alcoholic, but a cold beverage right there.
A mocktail.
There.
Yeah.
And a mocktail. Credit, by the way, to the Inquirer for this story, by the way.
Yep.
And I'll just say, you know, my tip for the Jersey Shore is unless I got a hookup, I'm not going down in the summer. I'm going off season.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if you have kids that are school aged, you got to go, right? Peak, June, July, August. But forget it for me because I don't even swim in the water. Like, I'm just looking at the water anyway. So I might as well go.
You don't even put a toe in it? Come on, man.
But you could put a toe in September, October.
Facts. That is. But, and I haven't figured out why people love the shore so much. So,
whoa.
But, because I'm a Rehoboth person. Fired, yeah. But no, but people do love it. Yeah. And, but right now, you know, y'all gonna have to be reasonable with those prices.
Absolutely. Let's stay in New Jersey for our final story now and ask you a question. Why does the train keep losing power? So, the train line between Philly and New York that carries Amtrak, NJ Transit trains has been plagued by power outages recently. 10 times in the last 2 months. Why? Well, according to an article from New York Magazine, the problem is with those wires and poles hanging above the train track. That's called the catenary. Did you know that?
I did not know.
The catenary. And the catenary on this stretch of rail is about 80 years old. It was actually inherited from the old Pennsylvania Railroad, which has been defunct since like 1968. That's how old the catenary is.
Oh.
And these power lines, they're sagging. They're not as taut as they should be. And when it gets hot, they sag even more. And that causes all sorts of problems, snags and delays. And it's actually the reason why our high-speed trains don't go as fast as they could. They have to slow down because of this old catenary. They've been promising to fix the catenary. I love saying this word.
I can tell.
They've been promising.
Say it again.
They've been promising to fix the catenary for a long, long time. Many proposals, even some money invested. It hasn't gotten done.
Yeah.
And so the train keeps losing power.
Yeah. And this stood out to me because my mom comes to visit me, and she's on Amtrak a lot. Mm-hmm. And she was stuck on the train. There was an hour and 45 minute delay for her not too long ago. And so a couple things stood out to me. Not one inch of that overhead wiring is in good repair. They said not one, 0%.
Couldn't even give an inch.
And the other thing is, 50 years ago, they said, this needs to be replaced.
Yep.
And this hill hasn't been replaced. They've been kicking the can down the road.
The question to me, of course, is it the catenary in the coal mine? Like, is this a symptom
of... You're so good
of,
at that. Throwing that out there.
Is this a symptom of sort of larger infrastructure woes related to our rail systems? It is worth noting that part of the Northeast Corridor has newer catenary, especially the part like in Connecticut
and in New England.
And that's why the Acela goes faster there. So I love a real world example of how infrastructure affects all of us. If you want to know why the train's not going as fast, it's not because the track's not straight enough here. I mean, in some places that's true, but it's not because of that. It's because of infrastructure. Infrastructure affects your day-to-day life. This is a perfect example of it.
Wow. And I hope they get this fixed because I want my trains to be on time.
But do you want your job to come from someone you know?
And that's what we're going to be talking about coming up next. We're going to be talking about nepotism. Is it good or bad? Is there a case to be made? I like that nuance you added, Avi. Is there a case to be made for nepotism, right?
And does it have some benefits?
Yeah. And who loses?
Yes.
Because of nepotism. Throw it out there. You can email studio2@whyy.org. You can call 888-477-9499. Again, the question, we're talking about nepotism. Nepotism. Is it good? Is it bad? Is there a case to be made for nepotism? Email studio2@whyy.org. Phone number one more time, 888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Studio 2. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Not Junior, by the way. LeBron James is arguably the best basketball player of all time. His son, Bronny, is not quite that good, at least not yet. Last month, LeBron's team, the Lakers, selected Bronny in the NBA draft. Bronny's basketball resume is not as polished as the typical draftee, and that led to cries of nepotism, which led to cries of hypocrisy about those cries of nepotism. Here's ESPN basketball reporter Adrian Wojnarowski.
I don't want to hear these charges, people talking about nepotism. No, the NBA is full of nepotism. The ownership level, front offices, coaching. Yep. I don't want to hear it all of a sudden because of Bronny James's father plays for the Lakers. Right. It is rampant in this league.
And if it is rampant in the NBA, is nepotism rampant in other industries? And there's some interesting research on that topic. We'll get to that a little later. But today we want to talk about the prevalence and impact of nepotism. And our question for you is this. Is nepotism a good thing? Maybe it depends on which industry. Maybe it depends on the person receiving the benefits. So what do you think? Nepotism, is it good or bad? Email us at studio2@whyy.org or call 888-477-9499.
Here to guide our discussion today, we have a trio of experts. Let me reintroduce them. Alice Leppert is Associate Professor of Media and Communication Studies at Ursinus. Alice, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Allison Schrager is Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Allison, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Stager, no relation, by the way, it's important to note for this conversation. Matt Stager is research scientist at Harvard University's Opportunity Insights. Matt, thanks for joining Studio 2.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Wonderful. We're going to start off our conversation with a caller. We have Boris on the line who wants to just jump on the downsides of nepotism. Boris, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, good afternoon. This is more of a comment with a twist on what I think most people think of nepotism. That's I'm a professional scientist also, and I'm a little bit past middle age, and I have an almost middle-aged son who surprised both me and my wife when he went into the same field that I'm in. And we find ourselves, you know, we enjoy talking about our topic. I'm going to keep it a little secret. It's in the physics area of science. And we, so the catenaries were a good segue, this, by the way. But when we find ourselves at a conference together, it gets a little complicated. Let's put it that way. I guess maybe it's like, well, Mozart Senior and Mozart Junior, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it can cut both ways, and it makes things complicated.
And thank you for that, Boris. And so
that's interesting. That's a really interesting place to start.
It's an interesting place to start. And I want to sort of start my conversation with Allison and sort of piggyback on what Boris had to say, because a lot of us, the knee-jerk reaction when we hear nepotism is a negative one, right? Some people, very negative initial reaction. So, Allison, when you hear the word nepotism, when we're talking about this practice, what comes to your mind?
Well, I think efficient transfer of human capital that starts early, because, I think I understand why everyone pushes back against it. I think a lot of us, have stories or have been in jobs where boss's son is there. He's not that good. He's getting paid more. He's making life more difficult. But in my research, I tend to talk to people in a lot of sort of unusual professions, like big wave surfers, bounty hunters, whatever. And I'm shocked by how many people are in it because their father was in the business. It's quite pervasive. And At first, you know, you wonder if that's just because connections, but it also often means that you get exposure to this industry early, which actually helps you learn skills earlier. And in fact, it is most common in a lot of sort of blue collar positions like construction and manufacturing. And I mean, I think another benefit from it is it also, I've noticed that no matter who I talk to, no matter what industry they're in, if it's what their father is in or mother was in, there's also this sense of pride, which I think a lot of people lack in their jobs now. So while it can be certainly inefficient, and I think there's reasons to believe that, you know, we're getting better at finding workers, so there's less inefficiency going on, that there actually are some good benefits.
And now I want to bring in Alice Leppert to the conversation, because what Boris said, our caller said, is this sort of, I guess, psychic downside to nepotism, which is that you're kind of judged in relief in comparison to the person who's related to you, who's in your field, who's senior to you. And I've heard celebrities, Alice, express this opinion. Not a lot of people feel very enthusiastic when they do this, but they express this opinion that actually I've been judged harsher, that it's harder for me. So give me this sense, looking at just like the Hollywood landscape, is that a legit argument that what we call nepo babies sometimes make, that it is harder? And what are the benefits that they do receive on their way to eventual stardom?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say that it's necessarily harder, but certainly if you're looking to be an actor or a pop star, anything like that in Hollywood, and you have a famous parent, the question is always going to be there about, you know, are you actually talented or did you just get, you know, all of these advantages? And, you know, but one of the things that makes Hollywood very different as a field is that it is very, very subjective. So who one person thinks is the best actor of all time, you know, the next person could think is overrated, and there's no real measurement, right? I mean, people refer to the Oscars or some, but even those are not, you know, those are completely subjective award categories. So I think that the question of nepotism is always going to follow those people around, no matter what, no matter how good they are, because there are always going to be people who are resentful of people who got where they are via nepotism. But on the flip side, it is very, very, very difficult to become a successful actor or actress in Hollywood, and half of the battle is just to get representation, to get a talent agent, to get a talent manager. And so if you have a parent who is in the industry who actually has connections to those people, you're already, you know, way ahead of millions of people who want to be in your position.
Yeah. I want to read a comment from Teresa who says, "Who you know gets you in the door, but staying there is up to the person. Nepotism is no different. It's an issue because sometimes those that benefit from it don't measure up." And so, Allison, I want to ask you this question before we broaden the discussion. And I want to focus in on Bronny James, because, you know, with athletics, I mean, at a certain point, yeah, you can get on the team, but in order to stay on the team, in order to be a starter, in order to be looked at and respected, you got to put those points on the board,
gotta
right?
Produce, yeah.
You got to produce. So, you know, can you talk about that and this the Bronny James case and other cases where the nepo babies at some point have to show and prove?
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's a little more unusual for, you know, industries to sit like professional sports. I mean, to some degree, you'll see some nepotism because Bronny James has had probably one of the best coaches his whole life and probably grew up playing a lot of basketball. But by all accounts, he doesn't have the talent his father has, which means maybe he'll get on the team. But unlike being a movie star, you know, it is really very clear, and there's very objective ways to measure his progression. And if he doesn't measure up and, you know, his father eventually retires, you know, he probably will lose his spot. So while there's some anger about it now, I suspect over time, you know, he is now have more pressure to prove himself, and, you know, we'll see how he does.
Yeah, there was an interesting quote that LeBron James actually gave to ESPN about this. And, you know, basically LeBron's argument was that, you know, Bronny in some ways has to want this more than him. I'll read part of it. LeBron said to ESPN, "When I was coming up, I had no choice. I literally had no choice. I had to make it out for me, my mom, my family. If Bronny wants to stop right now or never play basketball, just be a gamer or a chef or whatever, he could have done that. People don't understand how hard this is and the commitment for him to be coming out of heart surgery less than a year ago. By the way, he did have a heart attack. For him to be able to be in the NBA, the kid is special. I'm paraphrasing a bit, but that's what LeBron had to say to ESPN. I mean, is that a compelling argument, Allison? I mean, that for you to go into the field that your parent is in takes extra gumption because you, A, you don't really have to do it, and B, you're going to be judged.
I mean, I guess that's an argument, but honestly, I don't find it a terribly sympathetic one. I mean, as an economist, like I judge outcomes by, do we have a good allocation of labor? Do we have the best people in the jobs possible? And like sort of saying, well, we assume that because people are going to think less of you, or we assume that because you're rich, you know, you want this more than everyone else, and therefore conditional on that, we're going to give you a leg up, I think, is absurd.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Is it like, if that was the case, then rich people should have first priority of all jobs. And we know that does not make you a good worker.
Wow. Yeah. I want to read another comment and then bring Matt into the conversation. Rafi has said, kids are up against a lot. I'd give my kid the world if I could. Most people would give their kids, family, and an edge if they could. Many CEOs, leaders, and billionaires have benefited from nepotism. And so, you know, Matt, I want to bring you into the conversation and sort of, we've been talking about the NBA, we've been talking about Hollywood, but nepotism is pretty much everywhere and in a lot of places. Where have you seen it in your research?
Yeah, so I've studied this question in the U.S. economy at large, and I can kind of give you the like 1 minute summary of a paper I wrote on this topic. So basically, I set out to answer the question, to what extent do children born to high income families earn more as adults because their parents provide access to good jobs using their connections? And kind of in order to make progress on this broad question, I focused on one particular type of connection, which are jobs obtained at a parent's firm. So specifically looking at young workers who go on to work at the exact same firms that their parents are working at. And the paper basically has three main findings. So first, I found that using connections at the parents' employers is actually not an uncommon way that young workers find jobs. So specifically, 29% of individuals will have worked for a parent's employer at some point before turning 30. Mm. The second point is that there's actually quite large earnings benefits from doing so. So working for a parent's employer allows young workers to earn about 20% more than they otherwise would have at jobs that they got throughout without networks. And the kind of story to have in mind here is that these individuals are getting access to kind of good paying blue collar jobs, you know, jobs at construction firms or manufacturing plants, instead of working at something like a fast food restaurant. Mm. And then the third finding is that these connections disproportionately benefit kids from high-income families. And so my estimates suggest that connections just at the parent's firm explain about 10% of the correlation between the income of parents and children. And so kind of the key takeaway from this study is that children born to high-income families tend to earn more as adults, in part because their parents are better able to provide access to good jobs using their connections.
29% before the wow. age of 30 work at the firm their parent works at. I mean, that's quite prevalent. I want to read in two more comments and follow up with a question to you, Matt. So Tanya says, we've been watching white families do it for generations. As soon as LeBron does it, it's wrong. That's what Tanya has to say. Vernon says, I work in the school district. I'm guessing the school district of Philadelphia. And it's a cesspool of nepotism mm-hmm. in getting jobs and promotions. And that's the sort of the question that leads me to, Matt Stager. You referenced it a little bit. What's the alternative if you do not have the ability to get that foot in the door, to get a starter level job at the school district? How much does that affect where you start and then perhaps where you finish as an earner?
Yeah. So I think in the context of my study, which is, again, looking at people getting access to jobs at the firms that their parents are working at. So this is a kind of very specific type of connection. But what I find is that the types of individuals who tend to tap into these connections are people who have pretty limited outside options. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that there's a set of young workers out there who kind of absent help from their parents finding a job, would end up working at something like a fast food restaurant, so something that pays kind of quite low wages. But because of the connections of their parents, they're able to get access to a job at a construction firm or a manufacturing plant. You know, these are jobs that are, you know, entry-level jobs that don't necessarily kind of require very high levels of education, like a college degree, but nonetheless offer kind of much more stable employment and much higher wages. And what I find in my study is that even kids who kind of start their careers at kind of the same firms as their parents, if you look out kind of a couple of years, you see that these earnings gains persist. So you do see some catch up over time, where the kids who start off at fast food restaurants are able to kind of job hop and climb up the career ladder. But even when you look kind of 3-6 years out, they haven't been able to catch up. So these types of connections really do provide kind of like persistent gains for the people who can benefit from them.
Wow. And if you are just tuning in, the conversation for today is about nepotism. Is there a case to be made for nepotism, or is it just bad? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. I want to ask, because it seems like in some ways nepotism is natural and in some ways nurtured. And I want to give you some context. There's a doctor by the name of Jessica So. She's a dermatologist whose YouTube videos went viral. She uses Play-Doh to teach her two young children how to perform surgeries. Mm-hmm. Kids are like 3 and 4. Okay. And so if her kids grow up to become a doctor, right, a surgeon, and because their parent is a doctor, that and their parent maybe helps them out, that in many ways would be nepotism. But also, they've been doing fake surgery since they're 3.
Right.
So they might actually be good. And so I want to bring you back in the conversation, Allison, because you touched upon this, and I think, Alice, you did as well, just sort of the idea that you grow up in the industry. How much of this nepotism is a good thing just because you're just surrounded by it your whole life?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, it can be sort of early skill development. I mean, Larry Summers is a very famous economist. I think most people would say he's like a top economist. Both his parents were economists. And he has really adorable stories about when he was little, his parents like made them bid on watching like their favorite TV show, which, you know, sort of helps develop economic thinking really early. So, I mean, that gave him a huge advantage. Or I'm not sure if anyone's seen this new show on Netflix about Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. But
now tell me about it.
It's a great show. It's about deciding who becomes a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, mm-hmm. and then you see what that's like. And two of the women on it are daughters of women who were cheerleaders in the 80s. And in fact, the head coach cheered with their mothers. So, I mean, obviously there seems like a lot of nepotism and favoritism. Their mothers were good friends with her. But you also see how when they were little girls, they had dance classes from the second they could walk. They were at games when they were little. They loved the Cowboys more than anything. And I guess I learned watching this documentary, a love for the Cowboys is very important to being a cheerleader because you have that enthusiasm that you can't fake. So, And honestly, I mean, to what we were saying earlier, you also see how for these cheerleaders, they also now also like also don't really separate their identity from their parents, which also seem to have costs. So really, like this documentary for me or this show for me really showed like the good and the bad is that you did see this early skill development. These girls probably honestly maybe did have this advantage because their mothers are friends with the head coach. But, you know, it also did impose a cost on them, too.
Mm. Allison Traeger, let me ask you about nepotism in the industries that Matt was referring to earlier, these blue collar industries. I mean, does that concern you at all? Does it not calcify inequality? Because you were referencing about these sort of very highly specialized fields, maybe growing up in that field. Yes, mm-hmm. getting exposure to those skills is super, super helpful. But then there's lots of other types of jobs that have a sort of more common skill set. And that's the part that would worry me a little bit if I were making policy.
Especially because the industries he brings up is where nepotism is most common.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple things about it. I mean, first, I mean, the question is it, I mean, there's a question of fairness in perpetuating inequality. There's also the question of would better have people been in that job with that company been more productive otherwise? And mm-hmm. is there an economic loss there? I mean, I don't know if his research answers that, but that's one concern. The other about the inequality and fairness, I mean, that's also a very serious concern. And I'd be curious how it changes over time, because, you know, traditionally it was really hard to find people for jobs. You know, there wasn't good ways of searching. So nepotism sort of fulfilled this role of, hey, I know a guy.
Yeah, it was like Indeed before Indeed, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I'd be curious how it changes over time, and particularly has changed over the last several years. Now that you maybe could, if these people aren't as good in the job, then you could find someone more qualified and you don't have to rely on word of mouth quite as much.
Hmm. Interesting.
Very interesting. And James emails. This is an interesting email. James says, I work for my family, my father specifically, and our real estate business. I started mowing the grass at the apartments when I was a teenager. Huh. I now help run the entire maintenance team, and it's really the only job I've ever had. I'm now 35. I certainly benefit and have a lot of freedom working for the family, but it also blurs family lines. I rarely have a conversation with my dad that doesn't concern work. Sometimes I feel trapped as well because I feel like I owe it to my family to inherit the business and continue it. Nepotism is definitely a mixed bag.
Well, James is at least a good writer.
Yeah, that was great.
That's a great email.
And I think about this, Allison. I think about, you know, Bronny James, I think about, you know, the kids whose parents are doctors, right? And I think, I even think about, like, Dr. Martin Luther King. His dad was a preacher before he became a preacher, yeah. And then he has a son. And you think about, if you have this parent in an industry who's so great, and you are not as great, what kind of pressure is on that Nepo baby?
Well, I mean, as I said, there's good and bad. It depends on the person. Some people might be better. And as I said, I met a lot of people who it gives them this huge sense of pride. It's a family business. But as I said, as you see with, I'm sure, Bronny Jane struggling with, or the cheerleaders struggling with, is often they weren't as good as their mother. And how that does, it's a double-edged sword. And I guess it really depends on the person and their skill level. And you know, sometimes they're better, sometimes they're worse. Sometimes it gives them joy, sometimes it gives them nothing but aggravation. But like anything, I said there's benefits and drawbacks. And I think at the very least, we know from the research on net, it is better to have a nepotism relationship than not, though.
Let me bring Allison Leppard back into the conversation, associate professor of media and communication studies at Ursinus College. I know you look a lot at celebrities and celebrity culture. And I'm wondering if you think the presence of nepotism, the sort of very in-your-face presence of nepotism in a place like Hollywood, in the music business, has like a trickle-down effect in society at all. Like whether it warps our perception of the prevalence of nepotism, whether it makes us more likely to rage against it. I mean, do you think it matters in a sense that nepotism is, you know, prevalent in a cottage industry that employs very few people?
Yeah, I think it magnifies the resentment towards nepotism, because we have this cultural perception that fame is like a reward, that fame is earned based on your unique talent or your incredible personality. And so I think in that way, like, everyone sort of has this idea that they could be famous, right? Or like a desire to be famous, to be recognized. And so I think there is this enhanced resentment when we see people who we feel are not deserving of fame and recognition, because, you know, well, if I were just Angelina Jolie's daughter, right? Like, my life would be so much better. So I think it does magnify that resentment in a way.
But didn't it sort of, isn't that the way society always has been? And we had several comments to that. David said, nepotism is as old as humanity. Yes, he said he would help his kid. And if his child was talented and wanted to work harder than anyone else, of course he would help him. But I wonder, isn't this sort of how society was structured? If your father was a blacksmith, for example, going back, you know, years and years.
It might have literally been your last name.
It might have been. Or if your parent had a farm, you ended up being a farmer. Wasn't this sort of how things sort of were, this, how society was structured. You were kind of born into a station in some ways.
And absolutely. I think, like, we have this desire for meritocracy, and this belief that our culture should be a meritocracy, but our culture has never been a meritocracy, ever, right? I mean, this has been the way that it is, but I think we have these ideals that we should be earning things. And so I think that,
But are those bad ideals? Are those bad ideals to have?
No, I don't think they're bad ideals to have, but I just don't think it's necessarily, I mean, it's not, I mean, our culture is not a meritocracy, yeah, right? It's just not, and it has never been, but I think that we would like it to be.
Well, we have to take a quick break. Let me reintroduce our guests, Alice Leppert, Associate Professor of Media and Communication Studies at Ursinus College, Allison Schrager, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion, and Matt Steger, Research Scientist at Harvard University's Opportunity Insights. You're listening to Studio 2 on WHYY. Coming back, Matt, I want to ask you about if there are any solutions here.
Yes.
If we accept that nepotism is an inevitability, it is baked into human society, mm-hmm, are there things we can do perhaps to balance the scales at least a little bit, to cut against some of the ill effects? I'm going to ask that question on the other side of this break. You're listening to Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolf-Manera.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are continuing our conversation around nepotism. Is there a case to be made for keeping it in the family? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org.
And Matt Steger, research scientist at Harvard University's Opportunity Insights, I want to bring you back in the conversation with this email from Matthew, who says, I wanted to step back and remind us that nepotism isn't necessarily bad in an equal society. In hunter-gatherer society, certain kids went along with the hunters and learned hunting. They all share their resources equally. So that's Matthew's perspective. And it gets to this idea that, you know, conferring advantages on your kids is a very natural thing to do, which raises the question in my eyes, is there even a way to root it out? Is it possible? How do you approach that, Matt? Is Matt Steger still with us? I can always steer it to somebody else. How about Allison Schrager? You want to take a crack at that one?
Yeah, well, as I said, I mean, I think we need to know if it's actually a problem. I think it is, whether or not, and we all do strive for a meritocratic society, for fairness and for having the best people in the job. But I think to some degree, the market has already taken care of it. We certainly have never been a meritocratic society, but I think we're moving more to it. And now that it's easier to find good people, to some degree, I imagine it's already sort of lessening to begin with. I mean, I'm not convinced it's something that we really need to crack down on, that it is a huge problem. I think it's better to think about different ways that we could help people who maybe don't have parents in certain industries get better mentorship. There's evidence that even that can make a huge difference, like various programs that expose school children to mentors in different industries. I think sometimes it's not just the access to the job, it's just knowing the job exists can be very powerful. So I think rather than saying having like arbitrary rules, if we can't hire if your father works here, think about more like how we can nurture talent for people who aren't exposed to it earlier.
I want to read this comment. Alex says, I feel like resources spent developing children of successful athletes, actors, musicians into the same could be spent discovering new athletes, musicians, actors who would otherwise go undiscovered. I want to get your reaction to that. I mean, should there be more resources towards leveling the playing field in this way?
Well, I mean, not if it's taking away. I mean, a lot of, as I said, like, I mean, we'll see how Bronny James develops as an athlete. But I mean, he does have a genetic, predisposition to be good at basketball. And, we don't want to discount that either. It takes resources, as I said. I said, I'm against more like sort of a rule against nepotism. But certainly, I think it would be good to spend more resources exposing other people to these sorts of jobs and businesses and mentoring, which also can be very effective. And then, as I said, as technology makes it easier to find talent, then I think we might end up in a better outcome for everyone.
And Matt Steger, I do think, is back with us on the line. Thanks for your patience, Matt. I don't know if you heard the question earlier, but we're discussing this idea of if nepotism is so baked into human society, is it even worth sort of rooting out or trying to counterbalance? I mean, how do you come at that question, having looked at it and discovered just how prevalent it is, especially in blue-collar work?
Yeah, so I think there's kind of two approaches you could take here. So one approach is to kind of try to ban the use of connections in the labor market. And so while this approach might kind of promote economic mobility, it's probably not a desirable policy because, you know, the use of connections really do serve a purpose. And even in the age of the internet, it's still very difficult for firms to find workers and for workers to find jobs. And connections offer a way to kind of ease these information frictions. And so I think banning connections is probably not the right policy solution here. On the flip side, you could think of an alternative set of policies that try to build these connections for people who aren't born into them. And so really, like, any type of kind of social integration policy would achieve these goals. So reducing residential segregation or improving access to institutions of higher education for individuals from disadvantaged backgrounds would be examples of those types of programs. But you could also imagine taking kind of a more direct approach at connecting workers to firms. So, for example, there's a really successful job training program called Year Up, which, as part of their job training program, they connect young workers to Fortune 500 companies through internship programs. And this type of model has been shown to be a really effective way to kind of get workers on their feet and launch them into their career. So I think that the more kind of productive policy solution here is to focus on, you know, providing access to jobs for people who, you know, don't have access to connections to jobs through their parents.
Yeah, I want to read a couple more comments. Adrian says, what is the purpose of having family in high places if you can't take advantage of it? Okay. I don't think people should directly report to relatives, though. She throws that out there. And Janice comments, I'm surprised at these responses. Nepotism is favoritism. It's partly why labor unions and DEI are so important in the workplace. And so, Matt, I want to ask you a follow-up question. How does race and gender play into the question of nepotism? Because I know you touched upon this a little bit in your research.
Yeah, so I found that connections tend to disproportionately benefit white males. And so this is in particular because, you know, connections are most commonly used in blue-collar industries. And these are industries where kind of white males tend to work. And so the kind of use of connections to get jobs end up exacerbating or increasing both the kind of gender pay gap and the at least the black-white race gap.
And I will add in that Rebecca has an idea for all of us on the Bronny James situation. Rebecca says, this is a brilliant marketing opportunity for the Lakers and has definite benefits to the franchise. They will get so much attention and viewership from this. And in the end, these teams are about marketing and not just winning. And Alice Leppard, I got to imagine in Hollywood, it's the same way, right? Like if you have, you know, Phil Collins's daughter, for instance, starring in your Netflix show.
It helps.
It has to help exposure, right?
Oh, of course.
There's an economic benefit here. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. And we've seen this a lot with Hollywood families like Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith and their children. You know, there was a lot of hoopla around The Karate Kid and having Jaden be in that. Yep. And so then you have the whole family on the red carpet, you know, promoting films and various entertainment entities. So certainly, I mean, the marketing circus that will surround LeBron and Bronny's, you know, playing together, I think is going to be significant and it's going to definitely, you know, raise the profile as though the Lakers needed a higher profile, right. But it's
the Lakers who, where do they play?
Yeah. The Lakers.
Yeah. But you look, they're going to sell tickets. They're going to sell jerseys. There's no doubt about it.
And think about it. We're talking about it right now.
We are.
So
indeed. We are indeed.
Definitely
that actually,
some conversation.
That is the end of our conversation, though. But I want to thank everyone who participated. Matt Steger, research scientist at Harvard University's Opportunity Insights. Matt, thanks for bearing with us today.
Thanks so much.
Allison Schrager, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Appreciate the insights, Allison.
Thanks for having me.
And Alice Leppert, Associate Professor of Media and Communication Studies at Ursinus College, right in our region. Alice, we really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And now we're going to close our show with a little Olympic preview.
So we are about 2 weeks out from the start of the Paris Olympics. We have a lot of athletes in our area who are heading to the games, including University of Pennsylvania rising senior Matt Fallon. He recently broke the American record and the 200-meter breaststroke to earn a spot on the team, and we got the chance to speak with him before he headed off to the Olympic Aquatic Training Center. Take a listen.
Can we start with what you ate this morning? Because people are always fascinated with what swimmers eat.
The breakfast and how, of champions, yes.
And how much they eat. That was a big thing with Michael Phelps. Do you consume a certain amount of calories every day?
I do consume a fair amount of calories every day when I'm in hard training. This morning I went to Wawa, got a buffalo chicken sandwich to be exact. Got a chicken salad. I also got two croissants and a thing of pineapple.
For one meal?
For one meal, yes.
Dude,
it was a small thing of pineapple.
I need to swim like you. I wanted to ask because you get up super early to do swims. Tell us what your training looks like.
So I'll swim twice on Monday, once on Tuesday, twice on Wednesday, most times twice on Thursday, and then twice on Friday and once Saturday morning, and I'm off Sunday, and I'm lifting on that Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
So you have swum this event faster than any American. I think it says American record right there. Like, you know immediately when you turn after you get out of the water that you've set the record?
Yes. And I also know that I knew the time that the American record was. So if I looked up and saw a time that was faster than that, then I would also know that.
What's the first thing you remember saying?
I don't really remember saying any. I don't really say anything. When I was just like, wow, you know. It was more emotions than anything. It was kind of just like I was definitely pretty nervous going into that. I try not to be nervous at meets, and this was a meet where I definitely succeeded in that, but there were definitely more nerves flying around than I'd anticipated just because of the environment. Yeah. And, you know, this was everything I'd worked for, and I had, one chance to do it in the finals.
Yeah.
But it was overall just a burden lifted off my shoulders, and I was just really happy to get it done. It was just relief, really.
3 years ago and the 2021 trials, you placed dead last. So what's the difference between you, the you then, and the you now?
It definitely comes from a different level of maturity. I've matured a lot as an athlete and a person since then. And kind of going into this meet with a more structured approach. This is what I'm going to do in this session. This is what I'm going to do in another session. Even when I'm not swimming, has really benefited me, and it's been kind of able to lead me to just put up a much better performance in general, as well as having trained throughout all those years, gaining more muscle. On top of all that, it's a lot more on the mental side as well.
You know, Matt, we were joking earlier about you eating Wawa and then the chicken and all of that, but there's like a realistic scenario. You go to Paris, you medal, you're on like this fame rocket ship now. And you might get endorsed by Wawa or be doing all sorts of sponsorships. I mean, that's a reality for you that could be coming up in less than a month. Do you take the time to prepare for that, or is the attitude, hey, I'll take it as it comes?
It's definitely just a take it as it comes. I can't really put all my eggs in one basket. I don't know what's going to happen in Paris. I have high hopes, but I can't really see what's going to happen in a month from now. So I just kind of take everything day by day.
The last big name in swimming that I really paid attention to was Mike Phelps. And do you feel like you're part of this new generation? I feel like it's a new generation of swimmers coming up, and you are possibly part of that. Do you feel that? And how do you mentally and emotionally sort of handle being on that type of stage?
I mean, everyone on this team has already made history in their own right. And I'm just excited to be with this group of kind of other amazing athletes, and just to kind of see what we can do and make history in Paris.
Well, I will tell you, Matt, we are going to be rooting for you. I can't wait to see swimming in the Olympics in a few weeks, and we wish you luck.
Thank you.
And that was Olympic swimmer, we can say that officially, and Penn Rising senior Matt Fallon. Love the interview. Of course, we will be rooting for Matt. And I'm just going to note something, Cherry. Mm-hmm. His name's Matt Fallon, right?
Matt Fallon.
And NBC mm-hmm. televises these games. And oftentimes, the NBC late night host will have the winners on. And his name is Jimmy Fallon.
Mm.
I see some synergy there. If Matt brings home gold, I could see Matt.
I could see
the
Matt
Tonight
doing
Show.
It. And we'll have to get buffalo chicken sandwiches from Wawa to toast Matt, right? Well, that wraps up our show. Our show is produced by Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Al Banks was today's engineer. Kevin McCrory is the executive producer. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm hungry.
I am too.
I'm Bobby Wolfman Aaron. Thanks for joining us. We will talk with you next week.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at CedarPoint.com.